If you think trains will stop if they see a car on the tracks, you're right, they will. About a mile after they hit you. In 2015 alone, 230 people were killed at railroad crossings. Don't become the next fatality. Stop. Trains can't. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. One.
All right, welcome to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where the NBA offseason is trucking along at the speed of light right into July. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and I am joined once again by Tommy Alexander, who missed the last couple episodes because he was busy moving. So, Tommy, what's up? You know, our last episode, we had Ben Simmons, Luke Walton, Ivica Zubaka, and Tim Luwawu guests. Oh my. So I hope you brought something to the table tonight.
I didn't bring anything, as usual, but... But yeah, no, I heard the episode. It was great. Unfortunately, like you said, I mean, I got a little sick last week, and then we were moving and stuff, so I wasn't able to join. But I'm sad I missed out.
Well, that's okay, because we're jumping right into some crazy action this week for sure, with free agency starting Thursday night, Friday morning at 12 a.m. Before we get started, we'd like to please point you guys again to our Twitter. Please follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. And please also rate and review us on iTunes, because the more you rate and review us, that's how many top free agents Mitch Kupchak will call in the first 15 minutes of free agency Thursday night / Friday morning at 12 a.m. on the dot. So if you want him to call like 15 free agents in the first 15 minutes, rate and review us. All right, so with that said, you know, me and Alan kind of covered a little bit of the draft, but we didn't go too deep into it, and I'm sure people want to know your truncated thoughts on the draft as a whole. So let me ask you really quick, what are your thoughts on the Lakers draft as a whole last Thursday night, and what grade would you give the Lakers? Obviously, they drafted Brandon Ingram number 2, and then with the number 32 pick, they drafted Croatian center Ivica Zubak. What'd you think?
So I give them an A for sure. Ingram, everyone was like, oh, the obvious pick. Well, you know, you have to do your diligence. I still think, I mean, as much as we were hyping Ben Simmons, and I think Ben Simmons is going to be a legitimate superstar, very possible that Ingram develops into a better player. I'm not saying it's like, would I be surprised if that happens? Yes, but it's still possible.
And today, Luke Walton admitted that if it was his pick and the Lakers had number 1, that he was going to push for Brandon Ingram as well.
Sure. And this is something we were talking back in January about. You know what I mean? It's like Simmons can pass all the athletic and eye tests. And yeah, he does a lot of things that nobody his size can do. You know what I mean? And that's why he's such an intriguing prospect. That being said, we watched him play. He's not maybe like LeBron level dominant, which is like the hype he was getting, which is fine. Guess what? LeBron is like on another planet compared to everybody else. But so he can still be a superstar like easily, but it would have at least been a serious question if we were number 1, who should we take? So taking Ingram is huge, and he moves the needle forward so much for us. And Zubak, who I accidentally keep calling Zubich, and I probably will do it. I don't know.
Hey, if he doesn't toughen up, then he will be a Zubiach.
I don't know why I keep saying that, but that's what. Anyway, Zubak. He, you know, we all thought, okay, what are the Lakers going to do? Brandon Ingram and a center, and we didn't know who the center was going to be. We were throwing out AJ Hammonds, Cheek Diallo, I think, was thrown around, and Zubak. Deontay Davis somehow almost fell to us, and I think they might have. I don't know who was higher, but on their list. But Zubak was really, really interesting. I didn't know that much about him before the draft. A lot of people said that he was like clearly or should have been a first round talent. Legit 7'1", I think 7'4" wingspan, 265 pounds. This dude is 19, and you just can't teach size like that, especially at 19. So it's a really interesting draft pick, because what it does is it gives us a huge like behemoth who's so young that he's so like moldable. And based on the scouting reports I've read about him and some of the limited footage I've seen of him, he has certain traits that you can't, it's not that you can't teach, but certain instincts that you like to have because they're hard to teach. Like, he's got passing instincts and low post defensive instincts that I think for this age are going to put him ahead of the curve. I don't think they're intending to use him as like the primary backup center next year. And they should absolutely, you know, there's no pressure on him. He's 19, but to have him as like a Robert Zachary replacement in the short term with potential long-term of developing into like one of these very, very solid European big men that we've seen come into the NBA the last few years, I think it was a really, really, really smart pick by Mitch and company. So
yeah,
give the Lakers definitely give them an A. Apparently they tried to acquire a second rounder. They were unable to do so. So, you know, I mean, maybe I would have liked to see, because there were so many guys dropping, if they were able to acquire a second rounder, maybe I'd give them an A+, but it was a really solid draft.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, obviously with Zubac, he also has the natural instinct of being a 7'2" guy with a 7'4" wingspan, yep, and already weighing 265, which is already a solid
exactly
base to have.
You can't teach size.
And, yeah. And, you know, universally, actually, as I was reading people's, you know, draft grades, you know, everybody gave the Lakers an A. Mike Schmitz absolutely loves the Mike Schmitz does the videos on Draft Express, and he absolutely loved the Zubac pick. Mm-hmm. David Pick, who does the international scouting and usually breaks news of international contracts and stuff, he loved the Zubac pick. So I think everybody's high on his potential. I'm actually not as high as these guys, because I actually watched Zubac's tape a lot over the weekend, and I'm like, yeah, I can see the potential, but he's also kind of super slow and plodding right now.
Yeah.
I don't think he has he's not very athletic, you know what I mean?
Right.
But I think what you can get out of him is a lot of skill. He has really good touch in the post, and learning under Luke, I think, will really help him. So I don't think you guys should expect like some super athletic, like Jonas Valanciunas dunking Euro machine.
Absolutely not, yeah.
But I think if you're looking at like a Kosta Kufos, Timofey Mozgov type dude, I think he can get there.
Yeah, and I think that's all you can hope for with a number 32 is a guy, if Zubac develops into a guy who can play 15 to 18 minutes a game and just give you like Festus Ezeli type output when you need, like, there are going to be occasions if you're a serious contending team, you're going to be presented with situations where you just need a huge guy to throw in the middle. And the guy has to be able to play basketball, which Robert Zachary can't do. I mean, Zachary is really strong, legit 7-footer. He can't play basketball. And if Zubac, despite all of his deficiencies, can develop into a guy who can at least play basketball, like, we're not going to ask him to do that much, but, you know, to the extent he can catch a lob and finish it, to the extent he can disrupt things in the paint, for just short bursts of time to give whoever our starter is a quick breather, it'll be insanely helpful. And that's I think we're expecting. And if he becomes more than that, then great.
Yep. And at the end of the day, we can rely on him to dunk all the balls.
Dunk all the balls.
So yeah. So that's our quick recap of the Lakers draft. I wanted to get your quick thoughts on the draft as a whole before we get into our free agency primer today. So real quick, I can go first if you want to. I wanted to ask you your quick, give me your three winners of the draft and your three losers of the draft. And I think the weirdness of the draft will come out by us just describing who we picked as our winners and our losers. So I'll go first. You know, my three winners of the draft, I think, are number one, the Sixers. They picked Ben Simmons. That was the right pick for them, a guy they can build their entire offense and team around. And also, number 24 and number 26, they got Timofey Luwawu, who was an amazing pick at 24 for that guy to drop to them. And then obviously, number 26, they got a guy they can stash overseas, a Furkan Korkmaz, a Euro shooter who has a little bounce as well. So I think overall, this is the trust the process great draft for the Sixers. The process finally worked for them with Coangelo picking the picks, unfortunately, but
yeah.
I thought the Sixers had a great draft. And then number two, Phoenix. You know, I thought they got a great pick having Bender slip to them. They really need a versatile big man on their team. And then they also traded for Marquese Chriss, another upside pick who right now, you know, one of them can eventually play the center, but right now they have two very skilled power forwards with upside who can, and Marquise Chriss is a little rawer, so I think he can play behind Bender to start with, but once these guys can learn the game a little more and beef up a little, maybe Bender can play the five, maybe Chriss can play the five, and they both can play together because they both have shooting, they both can defend. Or maybe Chriss can't defend right now, but eventually maybe he'll get there. So I really like what the Phoenix did. And then lastly, number three, Memphis, for a team that didn't have a lotto pick, for them to get Wade Baldwin and then also trade for the Celtics number 31 pick and get Deontay Davis, which is such a Memphis pick. He's pretty much Ed Davis, but with like better offensive skill. For them to get another big guy like that, a solid big guy with upside who was just sliding down the board, I think it was a really good draft for Memphis. So who are your like three winners of the draft?
I think I have pretty similar picks to you. I would say that, okay, so my three winners would probably be, number one, I would say the New Jersey Nets. I think that's another team that, like, look.
New Jersey Nets or Brooklyn
Nets? Brooklyn Nets, excuse me. the Brooklyn Nets, they'll always be New Jersey to me, but the Brooklyn Nets came into the draft sort of like the same thing you just said with Memphis. They had no picks. And their future is so bleak, right? Because, like, they have pick swaps, they have traded their picks, and they're going to have be picking in really bad positions for, like, the next 3 years at least, or not picking for, like, the next. So for them to come in and get a first-rounder and a second-rounder in this draft and nab two pretty solid players, I think is going to be really crucial for their rebuild because they're going to be rebuilding for a long time.
So they traded Thaddeus Young for the number 20 pick, which is Caris LeVert. And who did they get with their second round pick? Do you remember?
I can't remember the guy's name, but I believe he's a guard.
Okay.
Really solid player, though. So, yeah, I mean, I think they should be happy with what they got. I think my second winner, I would say maybe Minnesota. I really like the Chris Dunn pick. I think he's a great fit there. If you look at that roster, the way it's shaping up, I'm almost glad. I mean, apparently the Jimmy Butler talks on draft night were not that real. But the Chris Dunn just fits with, you know, they've got Thibodeau. Now they have Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, Andrew Wiggins. I don't even care. Play whoever at the four and then Carl Anthony Towns. You know what I mean? Like, those are four guys, with the exception of possibly LaVine, who can develop probably into a solid defender. Imagine trying to do anything against that team, you know, offensively when all these guys develop and coached by Thibodeau. Like, it's going to be a real nightmare for opposing offenses. Chris Dunn, I think this is a little bit ridiculous, but some people were saying that we should have taken him number two. So people are really, it's pretty ridiculous, but I think people are really high on him. And to get him number five in a draft like this, I think it was really good.
Well, he was the number one point guard for sure. Yeah. And based on his defensive base, he's the perfect guy for Tom Thibodeau. So.
Yeah, exactly. And then for my number three winner, I'm going to have to agree with you on Phoenix. They clearly need big men. And they were in positions where they could have taken guards. And because when they picked Bender, Jamal Murray, Buddy Hield and Chris Dunn were all still on the board. And nobody would have faulted them for it, but they really needed bigs and they were able to acquire. They almost like they hedged their bets a little bit. You know what I mean? Like between Bender and Chris, one of those guys is going to be good. Most likely. It's very possible both of them end up being good. And they're really interesting players because when we were talking about this on an earlier podcast, I mentioned that I think Chris could actually develop into an NBA center because of his measurements and how strong he is and his explosiveness. So you have these two guys now who, like, in the event that Bender just ends up being like a more of a seven foot one stretch four type player, if it goes either way, you know what I mean? Like they're both combo power forward centers, both of them. So in a good way, right? They're extremely versatile, and they're both very, especially Bender is like amazingly active on the defensive end on the perimeter. So I thought they ended up with two really good picks as they're going through their rebuild, and those two plus Devin Booker giving them a really nice young core. They have a you know, really good potential to trade one of Bledsoe or Knight and continue to acquire more. It's funny because I feel like they're constantly in rebuild mode because it seems like they rebuilt and then now they're rebuilding from their rebuild. But
yeah, it's weird.
It's super weird, but they're doing, they're not doing a bad job. You know, they're acquiring good assets, and I like what Phoenix did.
Yeah, sure. It seems like they can rebuild on the fly because of all the young guys that they have at any one point. And they do have positional versatility with both Chris and Bender. All right, so let's move on to the funner part. Three losers of the draft. I like this because I feel like for the first time, like our lists are totally off.
Yeah.
Or like totally different. So here are my three losers of the draft, and I'll try and make this quick. Number one, Boston, yeah, for the obvious reasons. And this is not to say that I don't know. So to recap, Boston, number three, they picked Jaylen Brown. And in a draft so shallow, I'm not like super quick to say like this is a terrible pick because he could end up like making me eat crow really quickly. Because I like Jaylen Brown. I just don't think that he fits with what the Celtics are doing because he's such a raw prospect and he's not going to help them win now, you know? So, and this is also under the context. The reason why I have them losing is because the whole week leading up to the draft, all we hear is Ainge and his assets and his picks and how he's going to trade people, how he's going to get Jimmy Butler. You know, that's all we kept hearing. Boston's going to do it again. They're going to draft. They've had all these assets for all these years, and yet, once again, they come away with nothing, just making their same picks. And after number three, Jaylen Brown. If you want to say Jaylen Brown's a great player, then that's fine. You know, the verdict's still out on that one. But then we move on to number 16, and this is classic Ainge stuff again, you know. They picked this guy, congratulations, Gershon Yabusele, who pretty much looks like Jared Sollinger. People are saying he's like the French Draymond Green, but I'm like, dude, this guy is chunky This guy is just 6'8". He's like a fatter version of Jared Sollinger, which I didn't think was possible, but he is. And they're apparently going to stash him. I don't know. It was just a total Celtics.
Never going to come over.
Yeah, after last year, they picked Terry Rozier after already having like three guards, combo guards, you know. So this was another one of those things. They picked Gershon Yabusele, who everybody was like, who? What the heck? And then to top it all off, after that, I think they picked, I mean, this might actually end up being a good pick. Number 20, they pick Ante Zizic. But it was another one of those like, wait, who are they picking? Like, Scal is on the board. Deontay Davis is on the board. Why are they keep picking these guys who can't help them right now? You know what I mean? I almost feel like Bryce Johnson or someone who could help them right now would have been a better pick at that point, because it's like you have Brad Stevens as a coach. You just made the playoffs. You're picking stash guys and guys who can't help you right now and who need more development. So it's just a never-ending story for the Celtics, and that's why they're my number one loser. I guess we can jump to you. Who's your number one loser as well?
I was going to say, well, the Celtics are one of mine, but my number one loser is the Sacramento Kings.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. It is just like, it's painful for me to read about their experiences and, you know, these reports coming out that they were only able to work out one prospect in the top 30.
That was Wade Baldwin.
Which was Wade Baldwin, who they didn't even take. And he was on the board when they traded down, but they just still didn't take him. Their first pick was horrendous. Okay.
Yeah, it was a guy that I had slated number 32 to the Lakers. It was Papayani. Papayana Johns.
Exactly. Some people had him even later than that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And then, like, Scal slipped, and they got really lucky that he slipped because it sort of salvaged their trade. You know,
I guess the optics look better if you say that they drafted Scal at number 13 and then Papayannis at 18, but still, the fact that they have DeMarcus Cousins and Kosta Kufos and Willie Cauley-Stein on the roster already doesn't make that much sense.
Yeah, So, I mean, it was just like a combination of those picks and then add that to the fact that they weren't able to get anyone to work out with them. It was just such a sad draft night for them. And, you know, they're taking Papayani, and then DeMarcus Cousins is tweeting like, Lord, give me strength and stuff.
And then afterwards saying that he was at a hot sculpting class and he was holding something hot. I don't even know what that was about. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
That was so funny. I was like, all right, sure. But, you know, I heard that they're planning to maybe trade Kosta Kufos away for something. So maybe then they have a backup at each position in terms of the BFG, Big Father Giannis, and Scal as well.
I guess.
Papa Giannis would play... I guess, backup to Willie Cauley-Stein, and then Scal would play backup to Cousins, but still, it still doesn't make sense.
It just creates so many weird situations because this is a team that, like, for I feel like since Chris Webber retired, has been looking for a power forward, and they trade Marquise Chris to the Suns, like, or that pick that was Marquise Chris, and it's like, okay, what exactly are you doing here? You know what I mean? It's, are you trying to rebuild? You're acquiring more picks, but then taking guys who might go in the second round. I mean, I don't know. Maybe we'll all eat crow later, because I bet this is what everyone thought when we took Andrew Bynum number 10.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't know. All we have access to is Draft Express and, you know, all these publicly available boards. God knows what teams are actually thinking.
Right. And I guess at the end of the day, this draft ended up being very wacky and it ended up not looking like any mock draft. So I guess, yeah, I mean, the verdict is still out, but at least for right now, the Kings picking like two centers when they already have three is just kind of silly.
Yeah.
And so the Kings were actually my number two. Who was your number two?
My number two was Boston.
Okay, so we already talked about Boston. Ainge, silly. You know, 2017 is probably the one time they're actually just going to get a franchise player by default because it's filled with wings. So yeah, my number three loser of the draft, it's funny you had him as your winner, but I have number three Brooklyn as my loser, just because they traded away Thaddeus Young and their pick is going to be going to Boston because it's a pick swap next year, and they got Caris LeVert, who I like and I wanted to get at 32, but this guy could not end up not playing for you, and if he ends up not playing for you, you just lost Thaddeus Young for nothing. And you're bringing on this raw prospect who might help you down the line, but you just pretty much essentially made Boston's pick better. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
so
I mean,
Thaddeus Young could have helped them, I guess, this year. I mean,
yeah, and I guess my thought process for that kind of thing is, okay, yeah, you made Boston's pick better, but you have no, it doesn't matter, right? You have to look out for yourself because, okay, Boston got you made Boston's pick better. Who cares if it's, if your pick ends up being worse, then you just keep your own pick. You're going to get the raw end of the deal with regards to that anyway. So you might as well just try to maximize what your team, you know, what you can do. Get rid of Thaddeus Young, dump his contract, start, go full all in with the rebuild. And that, I don't know, I kind of liked what Brooklyn did.
Yeah, but I'm just not sure it's a risk to take on a guy like Caris LeVert, who's been injured like two out of the last three seasons. You know, I guess if they made a better pick there, I'd get it. But I guess they're going high upside, so I hope it works
out
for them.
It's high upside, yeah. It's high upside. Like you said, it's a huge risk. But if you're a team like Brooklyn, I guess you could take that risk.
Yeah, for sure. And so actually, number three, I wanted to also make a tie. I wanted to put the Milwaukee freaking Bucks right there.
Yeah, that's who I was going to put number three.
Number three, okay, so these guys, and if you watch or listen to our live cast reaction to the draft, you'll hear Tommy going, "What the fuck?" all the way in the background to that Thon Maker pick at number 10. And look, you know, once again, the verdict's still out. Thon Maker could end up being good, but there's such a positional redundancy in Milwaukee that I didn't understand the pick at all. It was a super reach because you could have got Thon Maker maybe in the second round. This guy, you don't even know his age. People are saying he's 23 already. And so when you see those highlight videos of him beating up on middle school kids, he's like a grown adult already. And it just didn't make sense because Thon Maker doesn't really do anything good right now outside of being a really tall ass dude with long arms, you know?
Yeah.
He can handle the ball a little, but you don't want, why would you want your center, your power forward doing that? Especially if he can't shoot yet. So, and right now they're still playing around with the positions in terms of Jabari Parker starts at the power forward spot. And Giannis plays power forward sometimes as well, you know? So where are you going to slot Thon Maker? Because he sure as heck isn't a rim protector right now. So,
right.
Yeah, it's just a weird reach for Milwaukee. And I felt like they went too much in the other way in terms of upside length. This is our Giannis pick for this year. So ha-ha.
Exactly. And that's I can't remember if Milwaukee had a, did they have another pick?
I don't remember.
Well, I think when they made the Thon Maker pick, I was like, it's so funny how people fall into, like, I don't want to say old, I don't know what the right phrase is here, but it's like the Giannis thing worked for them, right? So it's like, it's to me, when they pick Thon Maker, I just imagined all their scouting department and their front office and everybody in charge of making this decision all sat together, and they looked at Thon Maker's measurables and they were like, well, it worked with Giannis, so let's just see what happens. You know what I mean? Like, we could develop him, big deal. And I'm just like, oh my God, you're ignoring so much. You know, you got lucky with Giannis one time, and Giannis, if you look at his like highlights, he at least looked like a fluid basketball player. You know what I mean? And I don't know. This Thon Maker thing is, you know, people are posting clips like, oh, there's never been a 7 foot one guy who could do stuff like this. And it's him like doing crossovers and jacking up threes. And it's like,
you don't want him doing that.
I know. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I think the Thon Maker thing was so, and maybe they heard the thing. I don't know, but I just feel like you can get Thon much later. Like people were like, oh, Thon Maker, maybe he'll go mid second round. And they end up taking him number 10. I don't know. Again, that's,
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just
it's just a reach, and like they have guys like that already, and it's redundant, and you don't need that, especially when I think Milwaukee is still in a win now situation.
Yeah,
it was just
exactly.
2 years
they're
ago, they were in the playoffs.
Exactly, and they're still trying to make the playoffs, so it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, so that'll wrap up our wacky recap of the draft, and we'll head straight into free agency primer because that's exactly where the Lakers and the NBA are headed just 3 days from now. So we'll get to that after the turn.
I'm feeling great. From day one, since I started playing basketball, Lakers are my favorite team, and I'm such a big Kobe fan, so this is really a dream coming true.
Alrighty, free agency is this Thursday night / Friday morning, and I just want to ask you, Tommy, do you think it will be as epic as the Game of Thrones season finale, and will we see as much green explosion, green as in money, in terms of the amount of money that's going to be thrown all around? Spoiler alert, there's a green explosion that happens in the epic season finale of Game of Thrones. So, Tommy, what's your outlook and landscape on this overall free agency starting Thursday?
So, I don't think it's going to be as epic as the season finale of Game of Thrones, but I do think there will be just as much, if not more, green explosion. It's going to be ridiculous. There's so many teams have money. There are so many like mediocre free agents that are about to get severely overpaid. It's just kind of funny. I mean, like we're about to see like what the new normal is. But yeah, in terms of like crazy things going down, I think a lot of that has been sort of quelled at this point. It seems like most of the top free agents have already stated like, hey, you know, we're just going to stay with our teams, or like DeMar DeRozan, like I'm probably not even going to take meetings. Kevin Durant, like his list of teams that he is even going to take meetings with already seems pretty limited.
Right. I think one way that this draft is going to be, this free agency is going to differ a little, is that I think things are going to happen at light speed just because half the league has max cap room. And so I think the way that teams are going to differentiate themselves from other teams is by diving in really quickly and locking on to the free agents that they want right at 12:01 a.m.
Right.
And saying, here's a max contract. Are you going to take it or not? Because we're going to move fast. And I think free agents are going to have to make swift decisions. Front offices are going to have to make swift decisions. And I think we could have like five guys signed already by 12 p.m. Friday morning, you know, the next day pretty much, just because I think with everybody having a lot of money, if you're a team that doesn't have to wait on a free agent like Kevin Durant or something like that, you go ahead and go sign your guy that you want. You know, I'm sure Mitch already has lined up who he wants to call right number one, number two, number three, and he's going to offer them the max, and if they accept it, he's fine with that, you know? So I guess this transitions us quickly into the Kevin Durant news that he's not going to be taking a meeting with the Lakers. He has five other teams lined up, from New York, Miami, Boston. Oklahoma City is an option, obviously. But the Lakers are not one of those teams. I think he's even meeting with the Clippers in New York. And I think for once, this changes the entire landscape for the Lakers, because they've been hamstrung the last 2 years having to wait on a Carmelo Anthony, a LaMarcus Aldridge. This year, it would have been the same. We would have had to wait for Kevin Durant. But for the first time, Kevin Durant did us the huge favor of not even extending an invite to us. And I think people in the media are going to make a big deal about this again. But I think on our end, it's like, oh, thank God, Kevin Durant's not wasting our time. And the benefit of this Kevin Durant thing is that other teams will have to wait for his decision, and the Lakers can just go ahead and poach everyone else.
Yep.
And they have two max spaces to do that with.
Yep.
So your thoughts on Kevin Durant?
No, I can 100% agree. It is disappointing that Kevin Durant is not going to take a meeting with us. If only to the most likely scenario, I think still is that he does a 1+1 with OKC. And the reason I would like the meeting even though we have no chance, is because I want to show him that, like, hey, we're serious. This is our plan. This is our vision. These are all our young guys. This is what we're trying to build here. And then to go through a whole season with that, you know, those words in his mind, and he can see it, like himself, like the team growing, it's going to be really easy probably to turn it around from a 17-win season. And then so yeah. When he becomes a free agent again next season with Westbrook, maybe we can, make two more max slots again and get both of them. You know what I mean? So yeah. That's the main reason I'm disappointed. That being said.
And I think the Lakers could have used, like, the extra practice, too. You know,
Exactly. But that all that being said, I think you hit the nail on the head with the main advantage of we're now not going to wait for Kevin Durant. And everybody else who wants Kevin Durant is going to wait for this fool. And meanwhile, we can go snatch up guys. Like, he's taking a meeting with the Miami Heat. The Miami Heat have, like, no chance of signing him. Unless Pat Riley pulls some crazy wizardry out of his pocket, you know, they're not getting Kevin Durant. So yeah. While the Miami Heat are waiting on Durant and waiting to take meetings and waiting in the line and trying to communicate with his agent, Hassan Whiteside has already said he's going to make a decision on free agency July 1st.
Yep.
You know, he's not going to wait around. He's like, I'm a businessman who plays basketball. I'm going to make a decision on July 1st. I'm not going to, like, lollygag about it. And so that there's one example, you know what I mean? The New York Knicks, they're apparently going to try to meet with Durant, and Carmelo's been talking to him. And if they get a meeting with Durant, like an actual full meeting, and they sit around waiting, you know, centers that they're targeting, like Al Horford and Joakim Noah and all these guys, they're going to, you know, suddenly become available while, you know, and maybe we will have a chance to snatch up them. You know, there's just so many situations like that. Even the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, they're hamstrung with this one because they have to retain their own free agents in Harrison Barnes and Festus Ezeli.
Exactly.
Not to mention they probably want to go after guys like Joakim Noah or Al Horford as well if Kevin Durant didn't end up working out. So.
Exactly. And also not to mention they might be in a situation where they're preemptively trying to dump. They might get Houston Rockets. You know what I mean? Which is what happened to Houston a couple of years ago when they thought they were going to get Chris Bosh, and they dumped Jeremy Lin on us for – and gave us a pick that ended up becoming Larry Nance on top of it for nothing. That might happen to Golden State. Like, I don't think they would be. I mean, their GM said they are going to be very aggressive. So you might see a situation where either Bogut or Iguodala, most likely Bogut, gets dumped on a team preemptively just so they can go into their pitch meeting saying, hey, look, we can sign you right now. We don't even have to do anything else. You know, again, there's another situation where the Lakers can benefit. You know, I'm not saying all of these things or any of these things are going to happen, but the fact that we're not hamstrung by waiting for Kevin Durant makes a huge difference because realistically, we don't have a shot of signing him anyway this summer.
Yep.
So, yeah.
All right. So cool. I mean, we can transition directly into Hassan Whiteside. And just before we start, obviously, the Lakers, in terms of cap space, they're going to have around 57 to 66 million, which is going to be tops in the league, depending on how they move stuff around, whether they stretch Swaggy. If they stretch Swaggy's contract, they're going to gain 3 million this year. And obviously, if they can find a taker for Lou Will, they'd get 7 million or something. So the Lakers should have around 57 to 66 million this offseason, depending on how they make that work. So obviously, the news came out over the weekend that the Lakers plan to aggressively pursue Hassan Whiteside. If anybody's been listening to our podcast, you know we're very apprehensive about this guy, more so than most people. I guess, what are your thoughts on Whiteside? Because I feel like my opinions of him have kind of changed, and I've had a more practical view on what getting him and attaining him would mean for this team. At the same time, before we start, I once again don't want to undersell Whiteside's issues because they are very real. And if you don't recognize them and are happily skipping and dancing to sign this guy with, like, no reservations, I think you're being extremely myopic, because the same guys who are probably worried about DeMarcus Cousins' personality and attitude but aren't worried about Whiteside's, I think they need to check that double standard. You know what I mean? Because some people are just like, yeah, just sign Whiteside for the max and we're going to go on this crazy young core journey together. And I'm just like, wait, hold on. There's still this big issue looming because Whiteside on a veteran team with such a strong culture in Miami with Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra, even then he already had issues. You can only imagine what would happen if you place him on a team like the Lakers, where he is quote-unquote a veteran to guys like D'Angelo Russell, Larry Nance, Jordan Clarkson, Brandon Ingram, you know, they would look up to him. And for me, that's kind of, I don't know, that's a scary scenario. And so the issues are very real. If you need to look them up, Google them. Miami has had issues with this guy not agreeing to the culture. Pretty much he's been had tons of flagrant fouls, the same way Bynum had with the Lakers. He couldn't control himself on the court, had a bunch of technical fouls, in some ways felt entitled, stuff like that. I mean, they're things that are workable and that in the right environment you can develop and help him with that. But there's still very glaring issues because of the way that he was brought up and because of the way he feels like he was shunned by the rest of the league. So that's definitely out there, and I don't want to undersell that. But I guess for you, even with that being said, how do you view Hassan Whiteside and the Lakers potentially maxing him out for the $22 million a year, which he would start with pretty much?
Yeah, I'm 100% in the camp of I would for sure max him, but I'm very nervous. And I fully understand all of the risks with this stuff because Hassan is just, he's an amazing defensive force. He's also a very underrated offensive force because he sets brutal screens, which, you know, are really, really important for Luke's system. If you throw the ball anywhere near the rim, this fool's going to catch it and dunk it. He's got extremely strong hands. You can't make it in Miami in that type of system that they were running unless you have strong hands. I mean, like, pretty much the only offense he was getting was lobs and putbacks, and randomly he can make like a 8 to 10 foot jump shot, which is really weird, but he could do it. The reason you go after Hassan Whiteside, and I think you sort of alluded to this, is you need to start to show people that this is a desirable location. You go into this like fully understanding and acknowledging all of the risks, but beggars can't be choosers in this situation. As much as I would rather have Al Horford, you have to be realistic and know that Al Horford is in his late 20s. There are far better options for him out there. Every single team in the NBA has one max slot. And there's not another guy that we can get to team with Al Horford that would make it worth his while to come here. Guy like Al is going to want to go because, like, I mean, as we said, Durant's not coming. So a guy like Al is going to want to go to a team that's pretty much ready made. You can plug and play him. He's just going to fit right in and you can compete right away. And I think like Boston would be a great example. They need a big man. Al can shoot. He can pass. He fits with what they're trying to do over there. And if they signed him, they're already like the third best team in the East, and they're only going to get better if they add him. So if you have a chance with a guy who has already said, I'm making a decision July 1st, you're one of the teams that's going to meet with him. I mean, have we confirmed that we're actually meeting with him, or is it just we're aggressively pursuing him?
I think just aggressively pursuing we'll see.
If you can get a meeting with him on that day and you can show him the business reasons why it makes sense for him to come, you just do it. Okay. You just do it and you never look back, because guess what? This guy, Bynum's issue was the risk was you give this guy a max contract and he gets hurt, which is what happened, right? We just got extremely lucky that we were able to trade him before anyone figured out what happened. What I mean? But imagine if we were saddled with that contract. The thing about Hassan is you're not necessarily worried about getting injured more than you are about anybody getting injured. You're worried about his personality fit. When the guy comes here, he's going to put up numbers. You know what I mean? Yeah. If he's the starting center for the Lakers, he's going to put up 3 to 4 blocks a game. He's going to put up 12 rebounds. He's going to put up, you know, his 12 to 14 points or whatever. He's going to put up amazing stats. Yeah. And so the only thing you're concerned about is the personality fit. Granted, is a very, very legitimate fear, okay? That being said, if he's putting up these numbers, as Bynum showed, you're going to be able to move this guy. Like, he's 27 years old. You sign him, the max we can sign him to is a 4-year deal. And for all we know, he'll want a player option for the last year, you know, so it might only be a 3-year deal. And, you know, you're only stuck with this guy until he's 31. In the next 2 years, if you realize, okay, after 2 full seasons, he's not a personality fit, but he's still putting up his stats, you trade this guy. You know, somebody will take him. If anything, you trade him for nothing, trade him for a first round or whatever. Somebody's going to need a 7-footer who blocks 4 shots a game.
Yep.
So, and sets devastating screens. So that's why I think the risk is a little bit mitigated if you're the Lakers. And in that sense, it sort of makes sense to me that despite all this talk of building a culture and this and that, which, by the way, there's no indication that Hassan won't buy into that. I mean, there's a chance he does, right?
I mean, everything Luke Walton is saying is making me, like, you know, have wet dreams and stuff.
I know.
So. You can only imagine.
I mean, I'm not expecting it, but there's a chance, which I think is a rational stance to take, but there's a chance Hassan just comes in and is completely wowed by the culture and is like, yeah, I see my role in the system. I'm going to set crushing screens, and once in a while I'll catch the ball and dunk it like Bogut. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he might just fully embrace that. I have no idea. And if that happens, great. You just completely got a steal in free agency. If it doesn't happen, again, he's still going to put up his stats. He might be a diva. And if you think that his personality is a bad influence on the young guys, you ship him out.
Exactly.
So that's why I would go. I'm fine with the idea of going all in on Hassan right away, because I think that he's the one real, true max caliber player that we actually have a chance at.
Yep, I think that's the biggest point. I think as we've seen over the last few years of us wanting to trade away guys like Lou Will, you know, we have to start getting and signing guys that other teams want. You know, Lou Will is on a bargain of a contract, but nobody really wants a Lou Will type guard that they can get anywhere. You know what I mean? So I think if the Lakers start getting guys who are actual legit max level contract type players with high upside like Whiteside, you can actually use that as an asset. You can't come out of this summer without at least having a tradable asset that other teams would objectively find attractive.
Mm-hmm. And look, there's just like infinite, if you have a creative front office, which I think we do, at least when it comes to drafts, we see them do amazing things. And clearly they're moving forward with this Luke Walton hiring, right? So if you have assets, your GM will figure out, or should be able to figure out, a way to make those things work. You don't have to look that far. Look at the Oklahoma City Thunder, right, in the same conference. I mean, they traded Serge Ibaka for a very nice package. You know what I mean? Yep. And Serge Ibaka has ghosted the last, like, several seasons. He kind of showed up a little bit in the playoffs. But this is a guy who's, like, shot blocking has never matched that one magic season he had. He's still a very good shot blocker. His three-point shooting is so-so. His mid-range shooting is good but inconsistent. He can't really do anything, you know, himself. He can't create for himself. So he's a pretty good player. And that landed them Victor Oladipo, Ersan Ilyasova, who's whatever, and then Domantas Sabonis, who was the number 12 pick in the draft. So when you have assets, and then besides that, before that, you know, they make the trade for Enes Kanter. You need contracts. You need players.
Yep.
You need bodies. You know, a lot of teams don't want it. Sometimes teams, yes, they want to dump a player for nothing. And that typically happens in the offseason. When you're trying to make season trades, even in the offseason sometimes, teams don't want all the time to trade you two guys and then get nothing back in return, because then they have to go find replacements themselves. You know what I mean? And they're trying to field competitive rosters. So if you're in a situation where you can offer up Hassan Whiteside, despite his personality flaws, what, worst case scenario, maybe in a few years you can get some expiring contracts and a team will be like, okay, they signed this guy to a max in 2016. The cap jumped again significantly in 2017. So he's not even a true max. You know, by the time we get to 2018, throwing out a lot of years here, but try to follow me. And
then in 2019.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, we'll take a risk on this guy for 2 years and we'll send you our expiring contracts that we don't want. Big deal. Then you got rid of him. You know, I give you credit. Nobody here was privy to this, but like we talked about this earlier and you sort of convinced me on that. And I think it's a really, really valid point. And so that's why I'm pretty passionate now about just going all in on this Hassan thing, because we have a legitimate chance. It's going to shore up our defense so much. And if you have a chance, you just, in this situation, you have to go for it.
And teams have made worse risks than trading for a guy like Hassan Whiteside if it doesn't work out for us. Like you mentioned before, you know, Andrew Bynum, when he traded him, even though he was sugar-coated a little bit by being a player who was part of a championship roster, it's not like people didn't know all the issues surrounding this guy. And not to mention not just the issues, but all of the injury risks, you know? So when we traded Bynum, everybody already knew how much of a head case he was, how much of an injury risk he was, but he somehow still netted us Dwight Howard.
Exactly.
Based off of the upside upside he showed, you know? And just a few months prior to when we traded him, this guy almost tried to, like, kill J.J. Barea, mm-hmm. you know, with, like, an elbow and pretty much took his jersey off and threw it in the stands as he was leaving the Mavericks arena.
Yeah,
so
on people knew full well
the risk they were taking with Andrew Bynum, and unfortunately it was the Sixers, and that led to them trusting the process. even if everything goes wrong, we will have a taker for Hassan Whiteside, and at least we will get something out of that. And for the last 2 years, Lakers have gotten nothing out of their cap space. Last year, we used that cap space on Roy Hibbert and Lou Will, and we will likely not get anything out of those two. Hopefully, there's still some hope for Lou Will, but probably not. So with that said, Hassan Whiteside, max him out, 1201, let's do it. So given that, obviously we talked about his issues. Let's say we do sign Hassan Whiteside to a max contract. I think the next moves are very important that the Lakers need to make, and they're going to need to get some really smart culture-building veterans.
Yep.
Whether they use a lot of money on that or some cheap money on that, I think the Lakers need to at least do something like get a mentor for Hassan Whiteside, a mentor big. So I'm thinking of guys like Brandon Bass, if you just re-sign him. I know he opted out of his 3.3 million player option,
right.
But I think you can get him back probably for cheap for like 5 million,
yeah.
And he'd be like the perfect small ball five.
I think that's fair, yeah.
To back him up, you know. Or another option would be if you're honestly just looking for some guy to babysit Hassan Whiteside, you could sign Nene if he'll take it to like a veterans minimum or a $3 million contract. I don't know where he's at in terms of his headspace, whether he thinks he's still a player, mm-hmm. but if he's willing to retire and become like a, you know, just chill out in LA and earn a little bit of money on the side by just being a mentor, I would take Nene, and he could probably give you 15 minutes off the bench as well, you know? And then outside of that, you should probably sign more veterans at different positions. And a guy that we've talked about before is Courtney Lee. I think he'll be too expensive at this point, but if you're looking for maybe cheaper options, a guy like Jared Dudley would be an amazing culture fit. He would just round up all the guys.
Yeah.
So.
And that's the thing about Hassan with, well, you mentioned the big man mentor, and that is definitely ideal in my opinion. But that being said, if you're starting Hassan Whiteside and you have Zubac as like your third center, I think you could get away with even just going with a guy like Tarik Black as your second center. And I think you could easily get away with that. And I don't necessarily think that you need a same positional player to be that quote unquote mentor for Hassan, because Hassan is 27, you know, he's not like a 21-year-old, 18-year-old like Brandon Ingram or something. Like, he is a grown man. He might not respond well to another person trying to tell him how to play his position. He might respond because I think he has proven over the last two seasons that he has a decent idea of how to do that already. And he can listen to the coaches for that. You might just want a guy like Jared Dudley, who has a very strong reputation for being a great locker room presence, who's 30 years old, who, although he doesn't know anything about how to play the center position in the NBA, he could just give, you know, just his personality and just being around all the guys could be a positive role model influence for a guy like Hassan. It doesn't necessarily have to be the same position. So I really like the Jared Dudley idea, because I think while everybody is focused on signing these flashy guys, you can sneakily sign Jared Dudley to like a 2-year deal or something. And sure, he would be an amazing fit. You know, start Brandon Ingram, bring Jared Dudley off the bench. He plays great defense, really, really tough defender, shoots amazing from three, and he is used to a bench role. And he would fit perfectly in the system that Luke's trying to run. So I really like that type of signing. The Brandon Bass thing, I would not be opposed to. I just personally, maybe this is my bias, but I would like to see Tarik Black develop, because I really like him still.
Sure.
And yeah, I mean, I don't know. Besides that, you're just going to sort of have to see how things fall. There are some sneaky veterans out there, like Jared Dudley, who I think I forgot he was even a free agent, but there are going to be some sneaky prospects players like that who you can sign. And I think, yeah, all these reasons are reasons why, again, I'm completely in favor of trying to go the Hassan Whiteside route in free agency.
Yeah, and I think even irregardless of Hassan Whiteside, both Mitch and Luke have intimated that they do need some veterans on this team
to exactly.
help the young guys out. But it just hammers home that fact if you max Hassan Whiteside.
Exactly.
And to end this and close this discussion, Hassan Whiteside, I think my best comp for Hassan Whiteside is, I think you mentioned maybe earlier on that you thought he was kind of Bynum looking, but I think he's like a mixture of, it's like Andrew Bynum trying to evolve into DeAndre Jordan, but he gets stunted right in the middle, and that's Hassan Whiteside. He's more athletic than Andrew Bynum. He has the same sort of length, but he's not as injury prone. He's maybe could get there eventually, but he's also trying to get to that DeAndre Jordan type level of athleticism. But I think, yeah, he's just an exciting player to have, and D'Angelo desperately needs a pick and roll partner, a guy who can roll and a guy who can just throw the ball up anywhere and he'll catch it, and that's Hassan Whiteside. So I guess let's move on to other guys that have, that the Lakers have been connected to or reportedly are aggressively pursuing. We can get to this guy really quickly, Al Horford, who I don't think both of us think is a realistic option, but if for some reason he's like, yeah, okay, I'll do it, I would love Al Horford and I would prefer him. I know some people would prefer Whiteside over Horford, I guess because of the age thing, but these guys aren't even that far apart in terms of age. Yeah. I think Horford's 29 or 30, and Al Horford to me has always been the saner version of DeMarcus Cousins. You know, he may not put up the crazy gaudy points, but he does everything else you need. He's like a 15-8, 4 assist, 1 steal, 1.5 block kind of guy who can do everything for you. You know, he's like the older veteran version of Karl Towns, like a subdued version. Right. But I think in Luke Walton's system, he can do it all, pass, shoot, you know, give the veteran presence. So I would obviously prefer Al Horford over Whiteside if that was a possibility. But given the age and given that he's going to want to be on a competitive team and given that he'll probably start off at the $26 million range because he's 7 to 9 years experience. Yeah, that's probably it on Al Horford. Your thoughts on Horford?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of talked about it earlier, but it's just bad timing, unfortunately. I think Horford would be an amazing fit in Luke's system. But yeah, he's 29. It sounds stupid to be like, oh, 2-year age difference, what a big deal. But no, it is. And when you're in the NBA, especially if you're a big man, and although Horford's in great shape and there's no indication that he's on the decline anytime soon, you know, you just, he's going to be looking for a team that's ready to win now, and I don't think we have any realistic shot at him.
Yeah. Okay. I guess before we move on to another position, you brought up this conversation earlier, but what do you think about if you had the preference of Bismack Biyombo or Bitchsmack Biyombo at $16 million or Hassan Whiteside at the max, which would you prefer? Because I know my answer is like, nope, let's go for the straight high upside with Hassan Whiteside because we know exactly what he can do, and what he can do is elite. Bismack Biyombo, we've seen him do this, do some impressive stuff in the playoffs, play defense, rebound, block whenever he gets the minutes, but he just hasn't done it enough for me and enough consistently for me to give him $16 million, which, you know, the price difference between $16 million and $22 million to Hassan Whiteside is not that great for me to be like, yeah, I prefer Bismack Biyombo, and I don't think you could get the same return for Bismack Biyombo as you would Hassan Whiteside if you need to trade him down the line, even though I think Bismack Biyombo won't present have any attitude problems or anything if he fit, and he'll probably just perfectly fit in. But I guess what are your thoughts on Bismack Biyombo, and would you prefer $16 million Bismack or $22 million Whiteside?
I think it's I would prefer Whiteside, and that's, again, you sort of convinced me when we were talking about this earlier, but I at first was like 100% would have said at that price difference I would take Bismack all day and all night, because the fool is like, he's like shown that he can be a really solid player. Granted, it's been very limited time, but you know, yeah, there's part of me that wants to be like, okay, well, high upside, like, you know, he is only 22. And I think because so many teams are running the pick and roll and so many teams are going small ball nowadays, it's like, I think Bismack Biyombo is much, much better at covering the entire court than Hassan Whiteside is.
Sure, perimeter defense, right? And we saw that in the playoffs with Tristan Thompson being able to switch out on pick and rolls and defend the actual guard.
Exactly. So, it definitely helps a lot. Like, Hassan stepping up on the pick and roll, he's not very good at it, just to be brutally honest. I mean, he's just, I don't even want to, I would like to say he's, I mean, at best, I think he can be average stepping out on the pick and roll. What his main defensive function is, he's so strong in the paint, and he's got good verticality, and he blocks. He is an elite rim protector, you know, there's no denying that. So
yeah,
he's going to make teams think twice about coming into the paint. But the problem is so many teams are moving towards jump shooting, and they're playing, you know, out of a five-man lineup, three to four guys can shoot from the perimeter. So you wonder, okay, if you're going to be running pick and pop and all this and that, you know, really quick screens and quick ball movement and stuff, is it going to be more valuable to have a guy like Bismack Biyombo who can cover so much space in such a quick amount of time? It's definitely a debate, but because our team is so young already, I don't see how adding a guy like Bismack Biyombo, who's only 22, and yeah, he has playoff experience barely. I don't know how much he's going to be able to help. And so for all that, and just for optics of having a max level Hassan Whiteside type talent, I would think I would still go with Hassan. Yeah. The huge risk with Bismack is if you're paying him 15 mil per year and he ends up being a bust like that, it was just a fluke.
Yeah.
Which is like, it seems silly to say, right? Because he's been in the NBA for a while. But no, I mean, he hasn't played that many minutes. And all we really saw was he put up a couple of really good series. And yeah. If he ends up, which has happened before, and then guys get grossly overpaid and end up being a bust. And if he ends up being a bust, you're stuck with a guy who is 22, who has very little experience, who's 6'9". And what are you going to do with that? Hassan, like, has shown over two full seasons of the NBA grind that he can contribute on a nightly basis. So for all those reasons, I think I would still go Hassan.
Yeah, and then the worst part is 2 years down the line, you realize that this guy's actually 28 years old, and you're like, crap, yeah. Just like the Thonmaker
exactly.
thing. All right, so let's move on from the big guys and talk about another guy that the Lakers have been linked to, and I've had a lot of discussions with a lot of people today, and that's Chandler Parsons. Same with Whiteside, he has his own risks, but the risks are all on the injury end after, you know, he's had, over the last 3 years, I think he's had one major injury every time. And I get that those concerns, so I understand why people would want to shy away from that. But at the same time, I think we're underselling what this guy can do, and people are forgetting just how good Parsons is and how good he has been. Even last year when he was partially injured, the dude after the All-Star break averaged 18 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists on 51% shooting from two-point land and 44% shooting from three-point land, making almost 2 threes a game. I think his defense has slipped a little bit just because of the knee injuries and whatnot, but I think, you know, beggars can't be choosers, right? And I've always viewed Parsons as a overpay, but for a short period of time. Whereas I think we'd have, if we were going after a guy like DeMar DeRozan, you'd have to full max him out to the full 4 years. Chandler Parsons, I think because he knows that he has such an injury history, you can probably give him, I guess he's the last 3 years, he's made $15 million or so. If you give him like $20 million for the next 2 years and maybe give him a third year at a team option, I think he'd have to heavily consider that, especially because he just seems like the perfect LA Hollywood type of guy. But outside of that, I think the fit with Luke Walton's system is perfect. You know, he could be our better offensive version, worse defensive version of Iguodala. You know, he could play stretch four at times. He can play the wing at times. And I just like Parsons overall because this dude is a 6'10 dude. I mean, of course he can play starting stretch four. He's a giant. And, you know, some people are talking about how, like, well, Parsons is a wing. Why would you play him over Ingram? And I'd say Luke Walton is our coach now, man. We have no idea what lineups he's going to put out there, because Brandon Ingram, when he was at Duke, I'm pretty sure he played some two ball or played the two guard spot a little bit because he defended a bunch of small guys. And I think because of his weight issues right now, it wouldn't be the worst idea to have him play against smaller dudes at the shooting guard spot to start off with. So you could envision a lineup of D'Angelo Russell at the point, Brandon Ingram at the two, Chandler Parsons at the three, Julius Randle at the four, and then Hassan Whiteside at the five, you know? Or if you want to keep Chandler Parsons at the four, you could play him at the four and shift Julius Randle down to the bench, which I think, you know, some people are going to freak out over, but I think you still give Julius Randle his 30 minutes, but you allow him to lead the bench unit where he can be Ben Simmons, you know? And I think actually that would make more sense for a guy like Julius because he needs the ball more. And he can do his shake and bake stuff and creating for others, creating for himself off the bench more than he would in the starting lineup when you already have Brandon Ingram, D'Angelo Russell, etc. You know, so I think there are ways to definitely fit in Chandler Parsons. So people shouldn't be worrying too much about his positional, you know, place on the Lakers, because Chandler Parsons is just a versatile dude. He can play the small forward, he can play the power forward, and Luke Walton is their coach now. This guy will try stuff early on, unlike Byron. So I guess, what are your thoughts on Chandler Parsons? You know, the risk is real, but I think beggars can't be choosers, and Parsons is another realistic guy who the Lakers could get. You know, we'd obviously prefer a guy like Nicholas Batum, but that guy wants to stay in Charlotte, so what are you going to do? So yeah, your thoughts on Parsons.
Yeah, I mean, I think you raise a really interesting point, which is that we have no idea what Luke is going to do. We have a coach for once in a long time who he can just like sit back and not have to sit here theorizing about all these lineups, you know, like, oh, why doesn't he try this lineup? Why doesn't he try this lineup? Luke is going to try more lineups than even you and I can sit here and think of. You know what I mean? And the fact that you bring up that really interesting lineup of like, hey, if you get a guy like Chandler Parsons, who's a 6'10 wing, you can play, you know, D'Angelo Russell, Brandon Ingram, Chandler Parsons, Randall, and Whiteside together, and your shortest guy is 6'5", and your average height is like 6'10", on that lineup. Yep. And what does that do? Okay, it masks a lot of Randall's defensive or apparent defensive deficiencies, right? It cleans up for a lot of guys because you have so much length and size at every other position that it doesn't really matter that Randall's 6'8", you know, with not like dinosaur arms, but relatively short arms for his height, for his position, I should say.
Yeah.
So,
and then at the same time, offensively, you have three plus shooters, like elite shooters, in D'Angelo, Ingram, and Parsons to help Randall out as well. So
exactly. So I mean, yeah, my whole thing with Parsons, and I think my concern is probably the same as most of the people who have concerns. It's probably the exact same. Yeah. It's just that, can this guy stay healthy? Because if he can stay healthy, I think it's a no-brainer. But on the other hand, if he could stay healthy, he would probably be like a sure thing max player. So
yep,
we have to keep in mind that, like, yes, Parsons has made 15 mil for the last 2 years. Is that necessarily his market value, though? And that is the real question. It's like the presumption is he's going to get more than what he got in his last contract because the values of everyone's contract is increased. But that being said, he got severely overpaid in his last contract. Like, Mark Cuban saw an opportunity to swipe this fool because, you know, Houston was waiting on Chris Bosh, and they said, Mark Cuban has this weird beef with Daryl Morey. So he was just like, okay, well, if I overpay Chandler Parsons, then Daryl Morey's not going to match it, and I'm going to swipe Chandler Parsons from him. So that might not necessarily be indicative of Chandler Parsons' market value. I mean, it's possible you can get him again for 3 years, $15 million or $16 million maybe. So I don't know what his market value is going to be. If it ends up being $20 million, I have the same concerns that I think a lot of other people do. But if we did it, I would not be opposed for all of the reasons that you stated. He's extremely tall, and he has
extremely handsome,
and he has so many skills that you can't, like, in Luke's system, having a guy who's 6'10", who can shoot threes and pass and create shots off the dribble for his teammates, that's amazing.
Yep. And did you hear those percentages I threw out at you? This guy knows his role. He's a cutter and a shooter. That's why he shoots like near 50% and 40% from the three. You know, people are talking about Harrison Barnes knowing his role. This guy knows his role and does it way better on offense.
He's better. I mean, he's proven that he is an elite 3-point shooter. His defense is okay. I mean, it's not, I feel like people way overstate his poor defense. I think it's fine.
No, he was really good when he came out of Florida, you know?
And yeah.
The only slippage would have to do with his injuries, but I still think he's, at least mentally, he's a great high defensive IQ kind of guy. And not to mention, you know, this is a guy who closed the Dwight Howard deal. He got Dwight Howard to come over. He's a great recruiter, and he almost nearly closed the DeAndre Jordan deal. And if you imagine him in, like, LA, it's like entourage for this dude, you know? I mean, he could help us out immensely in 2017, even if he somehow gets injured this year. And, you know, the biggest thing for me regarding a Parsons deal is that I'm hoping that it's going to be a short deal that won't even be that risky, even if he does get injured for a short period of time, you know, so 2-3 years, mm-hmm. as opposed to a full 4-year max. So obviously, if they sign him to a 4-year max, I'd start to get as worried as other people.
Yeah.
But beggars can't be choosers, and Parsons would be another guy that would be very attractive and totally fit the culture of LA, while also being, I think, a perfect culture type of guy who I think would mesh really well with Luke Walton. And then outside of that, if you lock up Parsons, you might get his BFF Jeremy Lin to play backup point guard for you. So
that's right.
I made it. This could end up being like a great free agency. And like we said, it all starts on Thursday and things could happen really quickly depending on who Mitch has lined up on the phones. I guess to close this podcast out, I didn't really alert you to this, but I'll leave the floor open in terms of any other free agents that you have interest in, any other free agents you want to talk about. And I guess for you, I can start first if you haven't thought about this yet, but I guess who would you rank? Give me your like top five free agents, regardless of realistic fit. Let's take KD and DeMar DeRozan out of it, that you would go after. Because I'm including guys like Batum and Horford right now, just because we don't know one way or another definitively whether or not they're staying with their teams. But I guess who would you rank your top five? I think for me, I'd obviously go number one, Batum, number two, Horford, number three, Hassan Whiteside. Number four, a guy like Chandler Parsons. Number five, Kent Bazemore. So those would be my top five. And we've talked about it before in terms of getting a guy like Joakim Noah to a slight one-year overpay or something like that if we strike out on guys. But hearing what's going on around the league, it seems like Joakim Noah is going to get a very expensive contract that I did not expect. Like, the Knicks are going to go hard after him, and they might just throw 18 to 20 million, and some team might actually throw in the max. So at this point, I'm throwing Joakim Noah out of this picture as well, because it sounds like he's going to want to go to a team that wants to win immediately and go to another team that would risk paying more for him than the Lakers would. So those are my top five. It would be Batum, Horford, Hassan Whiteside, Chandler Parsons, Kent Bazemore. So if you had to rank your top five, who would it look like, I guess?
Okay, so my top five, let's see. I think number one, I would also go Batum. He's so versatile. The fit in Luke's system is like a no-brainer. And he's like a less injury-prone Parsons almost. Like, he doesn't shoot quite as well, but he does so many. He's like a triple-double waiting to happen. He would be like a more fluid, like agile Draymond Green for us.
And he plays better defense.
So. And he's an amazing defender. So I would have him number one, though, like you mentioned, we don't have a realistic shot. Number two, I would actually go Whiteside.
All right.
Number three, I think I would go Horford, because the only reason I don't have Horford completely off the list is because he's such an intriguing talent in Luke's system. But I mean, like I mentioned earlier, I think our chances of getting him are zero, so I probably shouldn't have him on the list. Yeah. Number four, I would go actually Noah. I think that teams want Noah and they're going to quote unquote aggressively pursue him, but you also don't know how much of this is agent posturing at this point. Mm-hmm. Noah missed like almost the entire season. He's been out of the limelight for a while now. He's been banged up for the last several years. And people have been saying this guy is done. So while everyone is sitting on their hands waiting for Al Horford and Dwight Howard and Kevin Durant and all these other guys, I think we have a legitimate shot to sneak in and get a face-to-face meeting with Noah and let Luke work his magic, and maybe we can convince him to sign a deal.
How much would you give Noah, though? That's the big question. See, because right now I'm hearing teams might throw him some crazy money.
What we hear now, who knows? I mean, he has a good agent. His agent might be posturing already. I think on a multi-year deal, the most I would give Noah is like $14 million. As of right now, that's probably the most I would do. I think that if he's able to stay healthy, that's going to be a steal contract in a year. I think that's like a... Even if he gets banged up a little bit, it's like the Warriors are currently paying Andrew Bogut like $12 million. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So I think Noah fills like a similar void for us.
And the culture fit is great, too.
And the culture fit's amazing. He is just like an amazing teammate. So for that reason, I put Noah there. And then my last guy, I'd probably say Courtney Lee. I really like Lee. He's an elite shooter from three. Very solid defender. He just quietly goes about his business. Doesn't really, complain. I don't know if he would come here because he might want to just go straight onto a team that can contend. But that being said, teams have money, but how many teams are willing to spend on a shooting guard? I don't know if there are that many. I guess the flip side of that would be, are we willing to spend on a shooting guard? I don't know. Maybe we would have to get rid of Lou Williams first. But
yeah. I mean, I Yeah, I love Courtney Lee. My only concern is I think he's going to get like $14 million for a playoff team that really needs his shooting, veteran experience, and his defense, you know? Right. So in that sense, I'd almost be like, well, he's like 31 years old. I'd much rather just pay Kent Bazemore $14 million, bank on the upside, and him only being 27, and Mitch already knowing him. So, but I understand the Courtney Lee thing because I love that guy as well. Yeah. So I guess, yeah, that rounds up our top five. Oh, this podcast is going pretty long, so we could go on forever talking about free agents. But the best thing to do is just wait patiently for Thursday to come. And I think Woj is having his vertical show, free agency show, on Thursday. So I'm sure we'll all be tuned into that. All I can say is green explosion on Thursday night. That's right. And we look forward to the craziness happening. So, yeah, thank you again for listening to us. Alan and I, and maybe Luke Walton and Zubac, will probably do a podcast on Friday night just recapping all the crazy stuff that happens that day. Tommy, I know you might be going somewhere soon, right? Vacation?
Yeah, like Friday that? I'm going July? To Seattle.
Alan will cover for you, and we'll all be good with that end. So, yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. Once again, catch us on Twitter, at Lakers Legacy Pod. Also, we have a Gmail account, so if you want to post any questions or topics we should consider for the podcast, you can email us at thelakerslegacypod@gmail.com. But most importantly, please rate and review us on iTunes, because once again, the more you rate and review, that's how many free agents Mitch will call in the first 15 minutes of Thursday night. So with all that said, Tommy, I will let you go. Later, man.
Bye.
And now, insurance-minded speeches from Geico.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the Geico app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the Geico app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.